Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Tiki Barber sent along my compatriot, David Deal, here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. You can get us on Sirius Channel 206, or you can stream us directly on your mobile device or other computers or whatever else you use to communicate with. Radio.com, just search for Tiki and Tierney. If you want to chat with Samter on social media, it's at Tiki and Tierney and at Dave Deal 66 for the guy, the big guy sitting next to me. Dave, preseason sucked after you get old. Preseason is important when you're young. Do you remember your first preseason game? Because we start 11 games tonight, as Zach said in the update. I don't ever remember being 8 on the first night of the season, but it is what it is. Do you remember your first preseason game? Because we talked about your first regular season game on Tuesday. You remember your first preseason game?
Yes, I do. We played in New England on a, I want to say it was a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember. I do remember playing in that game. I remember getting the butterflies going out there and running out there with the second team offense at that time. I didn't break into the starting lineup until the third preseason game, but I do. I remember running out of the tunnel in Foxborough wearing a Giants helmet and a jersey for the first time, like, this is real. It's really happening right now, and the excitement with it. And I just think that for me, I didn't have as much nervous and anxiety as anybody else, especially the rookies.
Yeah.
Because playing for Ron Turner, who obviously is Norv Turner's brother, and being at the University of Illinois, I ran our Giants offense for 5 years.
So is that was right?
That was it. So that was the biggest thing.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. So
no
for me,
you picked it up. In college,
I remember seeing Coach McNally, Jim McNally.
Uh-huh.
We used to watch film of double teams of New York Giants cut-ups and everything with Coach Easton, who was at Notre Dame and now is going into his second year with the Chicago Bears. And I'll never forget having that first meeting in rookie minicamp. You know how we used to have the dividers, so we separated offense and defense.
Right.
And out of 30 rookies, you know, on the board, on the left side of the board were the protections, and on the right side of the board were all the run plays. And you remember Coach Fossil always used to shoot the guns like Sonny. You know, from a bronze tail. He always had
this
the
is what's
guns
gonna going to happen. I tell you guys, don't listen to none of that stuff.
He comes in and he's talking to about 30 offensive rookies because, you know, not everybody's going to make it, but mm-hmm. they fill that rookie minicamp. And he says, is there anybody in this room that knows what's up on the board? I raise my hand. He's like, all right, Deal, get up here. So I go to the left side of the board and I write the entire protections with the offensive line and running backs and the tight ends. And I go over to the run side, and he goes, what, we draft Isaac Newton in the fifth round? Go sit down. And when I turned around, everybody in that room's face was white because nobody knew what was on the board. That's one of the reasons why I was able to start and break into the lineup my rookie year.
Yeah, so the preseason, unless you know it, unless you have a cheat sheet like David Deal had, it's nerve-wracking because that's your first professional game.
Without a doubt.
Right? It's not the first game of the regular season because for a lot of rookies, they won't be playing. Nowadays, I think it's changed a little bit. They push rookies to get started a little bit earlier than they used to. But, you know, I don't remember mine, interestingly enough,
really?
At all. Because I think Rodney Hampton started, and right after that game, he hurt his knee. And it was like it basically signaled the end of his career.
And at that time, you were returning kicks.
I was
and
returning
punts
kicks,
too.
I don't remember it. Like
really?
it's washed out. But I do remember the first preseason game for Jeremy Shockey. Now, Jeremy Shockey, and this is
Hall of Fame game.
Hall of Fame
game. I remember it. I was watching it.
I hated rookies because they don't get it, other than David Deal, who was starting almost immediately. Most rookies just don't get it. Like, the pace is different,
mm-hmm.
right? You're used to mini camp, and maybe you do a joint practice, but usually not. So you don't know what the speed is like, the actual speed is like in the NFL. And so rookies don't get it. They're playing slow. They're playing, you know, confused, whatever it is. Jeremy Shockey in that Hall of Fame game, he changed my attitude towards rookies.
When he stole somebody on the Colts' soul,
yes,
after he ran over him?
He stole somebody's soul, a safety soul, and he could have went out of bounds. That's the thing.
He turned it back in.
He caught a pass going down the sideline. Most rookies are like, yeah, they got my first catch. I'm going to step out of bounds. Jeremy Shockey turned back in. I think we were playing the Texans, maybe?
I think it was the Texans or the Colts, one of the two.
I think it was the Texans because he did it to the Colts when we went to the Super NFC champion. No. The divisional round of the playoffs in San Francisco. He did that to the Colts. He turned back in. I can't remember the safety's name, but he just trucked him, right? Didn't even, like, try to avoid him. Just trucked him. And I said, that rookie gets it. So while the preseason in a lot of people's minds means nothing, means this game is, let's just don't get hurt. For rookies and for some veterans who are evaluating rookies, it can mean a lot.
So, without a doubt.
So these games that are kicking off tonight, and there's a bunch of them, 11 of them we talked about. The Jets are playing the Giants. The Indianapolis Colts are playing Buffalo. We're going to go through a bunch of these because I think there's some important conversations that are going to take place based on the starts of some of these rookies. For the most part, it feels like they're insignificant, but in a lot of ways, this first game will tell you a lot about a lot of these kids.
It most certainly will, because when you're out there and you go get your first or two series or whatever you get, you always talk about let's go in there, let's get some confidence, let's get a drive going, and let's get out of here healthy.
Yes.
But right from that point, you want to see how these young players are going to respond under the lights. Number one, when they don't have a coach in the huddle or next to them like they do during training camp
That's
practice
true.
To give them all the tools. But secondly, this is now probably the 13th time that you've gone through an installation in a really vanilla offense and defense in a simple, basic game plan. You want to see what guys understand what they're doing and how they understand the playbook and the checks and audibles. Because if they can't get it in preseason week one, when you've already had today for most of these guys, the walkthrough before the walkthrough before the walkthrough, then these guys don't get it and understand the opportunity that they have sitting right in front of them.
No, you're right. And I think that's what we're going to look for, particularly with the quarterbacks that are playing tonight. And there's a bunch of them that have, I think, things to prove. Daniel Jones, a lot of people have championed how smart he is.
We talked
about this on Tuesday, Dave. He's going to play a lot. Eli's not going to play, maybe not at all, probably. I think Josh Allen has a lot to prove after last year. The success he had as a runner, he was very inconsistent as a passer, but they're playing the Indianapolis Colts, and that game is going to be quarterback-focused because on the other side, Andrew Luck is not playing.
I don't want to
predict that Andrew Luck's going to have injury issues all season long, but if he does, the Colts got to figure something out.
No question.
Right? There's an expectation for them this year. I think Washington against the Cleveland Browns is an interesting game because Baker Mayfield has all these new tools. How long he plays, who knows, but we're going to see Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry and David Njoku with Baker Mayfield for the first time. So these games tonight, it don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Win, loss, whatever. It doesn't mean anything, but we're going to learn a lot from what we see.
Yes, we will. I mean, let's start off with Josh Allen for myself.
Yeah.
I want to see him run an efficient offense, get in and out of the huddle, get people lined up, be precise and be accurate throwing the football. We know when he's on the run and he doesn't have his feet planted in the ground and have that platform, you may have the strongest arm in the world, but if it's not accurate and you're spraying all over the field, that's not going to make you successful in the NFL. Not to mention, when you look back at his last season, he held on to the ball each pass 3.2 seconds, which was the highest in the NFL and which is the highest since Tim Tebow in 2011.
But it's not all his fault.
No, I understand that. But wouldn't you think when you have a damaged offensive line and your receivers aren't that good, you're getting rid of the ball and you're reading those reads perfectly?
Yeah, LeSean McCoy standing back there. Uh-huh. Behind, Shady, take that. Right?
No question. So you know that they've upgraded their offensive line. You know that Brian Daboll has now had a full entire offseason with Josh Allen to tailor-made game plans towards him to where he can still use his athleticism and his feet to keep a defense honest on the backside to play 11-on-11 football, but still be proficient on first and second down.
Yeah, no, I think, and that game is interesting, obviously, and we'll stick it here for a second because of Andrew Luck. We've talked about Andrew Luck. I don't know if we did this with you on Tuesday.
No, we didn't get into Andrew yet.
I mean, I have this saying, and Ronnie Barnes said this to me. Now, Ronnie Barnes was the Giants' vice president of athletic training. He's basically our head trainer at the New York Giants. And Joe Montgomery, who played at Ohio State, he was a good, stout, like, little runner. This was pre-you.
Okay.
This is before your time. And he was good. Like, they wanted to get him on the field. This is before I'd established myself. But he kept getting, like, these nicks and getting banged around. And he'd have a knee here. He'd have a hamstring, a quad, or hip, or something like that. And then one day we're out. He's fully healthy right now. He's in practice. Not a game. He's in practice. Goes and takes his steps.
Talk about practice.
Talk about practice. Tears his Achilles.
Ooh.
And I'm like, man, this kid just can't, like, buy a break. And Ronnie Barnes says to me, he's got bad cells, right? So in my mind, bad cells stuck with guys who always are hurt.
Yeah.
And so BT hears me say this all the time. That's the genesis of it. I don't think I've ever told people where that bad cells
came from. You can't make the club in the tub.
You're right, right. But the bad cell thing came from Ronnie Barnes saying, yeah, Joe Monk, he just has bad cells. That's the only way you can explain why he keeps getting hurt. Andrew Luck is getting very close to being in my bad cell category. Very close. Now, currently we know what he has. He has a calf injury that he says is not an Achilles injury, but we saw what happened with Kevin Durant when they said it was a calf injury and not an Achilles injury. I think he's going to be okay, but they've already said he's not playing or practicing for this entire week. If this pushes into another week, the Indianapolis Colts got to figure out something. Now, Jacoby Brissett we saw play a couple of years ago. He was okay. Wasn't great. He was okay. But if Andrew Luck is going to be injury prone in the next year or so, they got to find a solution. They got to start thinking about a solution, and immediately they need one for this year if he has some complications from this calf injury. So, yes, we'll look at Josh Allen and his evolution. This Indianapolis Colts Buffalo game is probably the most important one to watch simply because if Andrew Luck can't play, what are the Colts doing?
See, for me, I'm not that concerned about it because
I wouldn't be either if he wasn't always hurt.
But the thing is everybody and myself was overly concerned last year when he wasn't throwing the football and came out and played the way that he did.
True.
And if you remember, before one of the ends of the half, I want to say in Houston, they actually brought out Brissett to throw the Hail Mary.
That's right.
So Andrew
Luck
didn't have to do
that.
So you know that they're being overly cautious with him because they understand the magnitude of having him on the field and off of the field. I also think part of him having the bad cells was bad judgment calls going back to 2016 in his shoulder and not getting it repaired right away and trying to fight through it and not listening to the medical staff or not getting the right advice
from the medical staff. And the fact that they had a terrible offensive line.
Oh, I know.
He was running for his life.
You saw the upgrades that they made with Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith last year. Anthony Costanzo started getting back to his full self after I think it was a hamstring or a back injury going into last season. So you know that they finally built that offensive line around him just like they had to do with Peyton Manning in his first couple of years. But you are 100% correct. When you have this different combination of wide receivers now coming in, and you know that you have to take Frank Reich's offense to the next step in your second year, that timing, that muscle memory, pace of the game, you've got to do it during the preseason because you and I both know practice does not simulate.
No, practice is nonsense. You're running around in underwear half the time these days. That's helmets and no pads. There are a lot of good games and a lot of interesting matchups that will happen tonight. Again, the games don't mean anything, but the matchups are important. Baker Mayfield, Dwayne Haskins is on the other side of that one. We hit New York. We didn't hit New York yet, but we will. Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold. But the most interesting one, because we're all waiting for this, Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury's air raid offense in Arizona. Can it work? And the National Football League. We'll discuss it next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by Geico. Great news, there's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Tiki Barber, David Deal here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Give us a call. Let us know which preseason game you're most looking forward to, or if you're even going to watch it. You might not even watch it. 855-212-4227. Dave, Kyler Murray, perfect set of circumstances. runs an air raid offense with Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma.
Yep.
Cliff Kingsbury gets hired as the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals solely to run the air raid offense because there is no offensive coordinator with the Arizona Cardinals right now. So you know what offense they're going to run. The question that I've been thinking about, I know a lot of people have as well, Kyler Murray's not doing a traditional, not playing a traditional drop back, you know, I'm going to read, get rid of the ball. That's not what they're going to run.
No.
Right? The question is, and I can't figure it out, and I'm so interested to see it, is it going to work in the NFL?
I think when it comes down to it, number one, when it came down to Cliff Kingsbury becoming the head coach, and then number two, him going back to last year saying if he had the number one pick, this is the player that he would pick. As Steve Keim, as the general manager, you have to give him the keys to every accessible car he wants.
Right.
Otherwise, if this doesn't work, this could be the worst head coaching decision and hiring in NFL history. So you know that they're banking on this. They're banking on his ability to change the launch point with an offensive line that has not been good over the last two seasons and hopefully getting David Johnson back to form the way he was 2 years ago. So I think that within the first half of the season, it may be possible that it works. We hear Larry Fitzgerald praising him as a quarterback. But you and I both know once you get to that first bye week and you get to the second half of the season, and there's film out there, every defensive coordinator now knows how to identify those weaknesses on that side of the ball and now force it into that weakness, which is their offensive line. So if they can't get things going early on, they're going to be a one-dimensional football team, and teams are going to be playing the run on the way to the quarterback.
Yeah, what David's talking about, and I think we talked to – I forgot who we talked to last year when we did our training camp two-a-days with the Arizona Cardinals. I think it was a former Giant offensive lineman. Justin Pugh, exactly.
Yeah, Pugh. Yeah,
we talked to Justin Pugh. He'll actually be with us on Monday when we preview the Arizona Cardinals again. But he was telling us last year, like, every one of those guys, all five of them were brand new to each other, right? None of them had worked together before, and – you can talk to this. That's impossible. It's impossible because there's unsaid, sometimes said communication that exists between those five guys. That if you're not on the same page, you can't function.
No question.
Know what I mean? You're thinking two different things, and you're supposed to double, and you're supposed to help, and you need you know assistance. You're squeezing or whatever it is. It just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. That cohesion has to be built over a period of time. During games, not just during practice. And people, that's the one misconception that over the last 3 years they've realized this isn't a plug-and-play position where if somebody goes down, you can just toss somebody in there and it's going to be successful. You know, you think about the time as an offensive lineman when we first started off, when Joe Theismann called us the worst offensive line in the NFL.
Like, all right, I'll take my worst.
But the work that we put in together during the offseason and during those struggles, that's what really sets yourself apart from other offenses. Not to mention, if you are not a great offensive line, what's the biggest strength to take things away? Is running the football and being efficient with it so at least you can get play action going just to get that middle linebacker or that safety to take that one step down to help the quarterback out. So it's not as easy as it sounds, especially like we talked about on Tuesday, not having the real type of training camp that you used to have.
No, you don't
where you have to move a defensive lineman from point A to point B up against his own will. You're not working those double team fits. You're not working all those things that are going to be the biggest advantage for you as an offensive line, having that cohesion and having that communication. So I know that last year was the first year and it was their first year together. But then once again, this is their second year, which is almost like their first year all over because they're learning a whole brand new scheme.
Different offense.
And my big thing with Cliff Kingsbury is how is he going to handle being the head coach and the offensive coordinator?
It's hard.
That's one of the toughest things to do, not only just your first year, but all the demands that are put on you. Think about Matt Nagy making sure that he kept Vic Fangio.
Right.
Sean McVay making sure that he kept Wade Phillips.
Right.
So that the minute the offensive series is done, he doesn't have to worry about that side of the ball. He can go over to the tablet and help the quarterback out. There's so much more of a demand on him now in regards to his time and the attention to detail he has to have, especially when you and I both know it's about time management in a game and using the right timeouts at the right time. So it's going to be very important to see how this works out for
him. Right. He does have Vance Joseph, who was recently a head coach, but he was only a head coach for 2 years in Denver. Maybe 2 years.
And it didn't work out so well with his game management defensive side of the ball. That's why Vic Fangio's there.
You're right. Let me take a sidestep real quick back to the offensive line, because I like reminiscing my offensive line, especially with Dave. What other sport did you play?
I didn't play football until high school. I was a hooper. I was a basketball player.
So you were a basketball player. Yeah, you were an athlete.
My entire life, I was a basketball player, and it was the greatest thing for me because I wasn't beat up as a football player because I wasn't playing as a peewee.
Yeah.
But think about playing offensive tackle and playing defense on basketball. The defensive end is the basketball player that's got the ball. The hoop is Eli Manning. It's the same footwork, the same cutoff angles, the same everything, except for you get to punch and keep them away from your body.
Yeah.
Having that background was the greatest thing for me being an offensive line.
Now, I know that Richie Sorberg was a tight end.
Yeah, he was a tight end, and then they moved to guard. Yeah.
And then he moved to guard. So he was also an athlete. Sean was always a center, but
he could play guard, but he was
smaller,
more of a center.
But he was
smaller.
He wasn't like a big, bulky offensive lineman.
He was the compact guy because you have to be. Think about Richie Soibert, Sean O'Hara, and Chris Knee.
Yeah.
Neither one of them are over 6'3", and they fight over who's taller. And I'll never believe, and you'll never believe this, in between a TV timeout on Sunday Night Football, we're sitting there for a review, and it's taken over and over. They asked on the other side, Dan Terrence Newman, which one of us is taller? And they're standing head back to back to see which one's taller. But when you have those interior offensive linemen, you're worried about them being too tall because, number one, the quarterback has to be able to throw over them.
That's going
to
be the issue
with
Kyler
Murray.
And
two, you have to worry about the depth. We always talk the tackles are responsible for the width. Keep those defensive ends and outside linebackers wide. But those guards in the center have to make sure that they don't give up any ground so that quarterback can step up and deliver it. That's why it's important to have a big, thick guards that can maintain leverage and can't give up ground and get in bull rush.
Yeah. Snee did other sports or no?
He played basketball too.
Also basketball. Yeah. The reason I asked is because we started to see this shift in offensive linemen, and it was right around the time that you guys were called the worst offensive line in football. You guys were all athletes.
Yeah.
Right? You weren't just big, meaty road grinders.
No, you got to be able to run.
Right?
You got to be able to move.
Run. And, and I think when I think about the Arizona Cardinals offensive scheme, whatever it's going to be, it's got to be a lot like what we did as a Giants team back then, where misdirection and guards getting out in front of you, tackles getting out in front of you, the center, O'Hara would pull out around the end.
We used to do double scissors both ways.
It was amazing. But in this kind of offense, if you don't have athletic offensive linemen.
More importantly, athletic tackles.
True. That's where you fail.
No question, because, think about the evolution of me early on going up against Michael Strahan, and then all of a sudden DeMarcus Ware is in the league at 6'5", running like a linebacker. That was the first true player that really shifted the dynamic to that 3-4 defense that, like Lawrence Taylor, the only player in my 11-year career that when you'd come out of the huddle, usually 52 is the mic, 50 is the mic, you're identifying the middle of the defense. 94 was the only player we turned around. Okay, where's 94?
Yeah.
Because you couldn't have a running back and a tight end on them.
Right.
So when you have this type of system, you have to be efficient in zone blocking. But to go along with it, that deception and that ability to show misdirection is what sets up the runs because you're holding the backside. And all it takes is that little seam, to cut it backside to that A-gap for 96 yards at Oakland to make that big play that can change the dynamic of the game.
Thank you, Luke Pettigrew. That gave me...
The old St. Kinge on the backside.
Well, no, it was a false start. It would have been a 90-yard touchdown. He false started because that's what Luke was like to do. And then we went back to the 5-yard line, and we go 95 or 96.
Still one of the longest running plays in NFL history.
It is. Longest one in Giants history. Let's get to the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals have a lot of question marks, so to speak. Andy Dalton, obviously A.J. Green is going to miss some games in the regular season. We're going to do our Tiki and Tierney training camp two-a-days on the Cincinnati Bengals with Dave Lampham, who is the Bengals radio analyst. But before we get there, let's get a CBS Sports update from Rich Ackerman. Welcome back, Tiki and Tierney, here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Tiki Barber, David Deal. Give us a call, 855-212-4227, if you're so inclined. Or you can tweet us at Tiki and Tierney. Samter will check that. Stream us, radio.com. We're going to do our Cincinnati Bengals preview here in just a second. But let me ask you, Dave, as we wait for Dave Lampham, who is a radio analyst for the Cincinnati Bengals. Andy Dalton has this, I don't know, reputation of not being the guy and not being reliable for the Cincinnati Bengals. How long should they hold on and try to make this happen? Because it feels like it's been too long already.
I think that this is going to be the true test with now Zach Taylor coming over. We all know that he is the back of Sean McVay, the same type mm-hmm. of offensive system. We know that now this is the direction that NFL teams are going.
That's right.
Younger, more proficient, a different type of football, but one that they feel that can relate to the team better. If Andy Dalton, with all of the experience that he has had in his career, can't come into this new offense that is tailor-made for a quarterback, like we saw with Jared Goff, to be proficient with half-field reads and easy decision-making, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Now, then it seems like you have to pull the trigger here. But especially the A.J. Green injury. I really want to like A.J. Green.
And I do, too. But once again, are we talking bad sells again?
Yeah, but one was a toe, you know, and it's like, yeah, toes happen. Right? You jam your foot, your big toe, and it just hurts.
Then they try to put the steel plate in your shoe
That doesn't help at all. Actually makes it work.
Running on a steel plate, ding, that doesn't make anything
feel
better.
No, it doesn't happen. It doesn't make it any better. But I remember Brandon said this, BT, said this last year, actually, because we knew that the Cincinnati Bengals were headed towards a rebuild. We knew that Marvin Lewis's time was limited. They should have traded A.J. Green. When they had a chance, when they still didn't have to worry about people questioning his health.
Yes.
And they could have gotten something for him because he's still an elite player. When he's healthy, he's unreal. The problem is he just hasn't been healthy a lot. And it's one thing after another, after another, after another. This current one, he's expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks with an ankle injury that happened, I think, on the first day of training camp. Maybe not even in training camp. I think it might have been in the off season. And what felt like it was a benign issue for A.J. Green ended up requiring surgery.
Yeah.
Right? And when you sprain your ankle and then you have to have surgery, then you tend to not, you know, things tend to not go straight.
Especially when we're
way.
Talking about a quick twitch athlete that has to win at the point of attack and use that athleticism to win routes over defensive backs. That was one of the biggest things and the biggest downfall that people don't talk about with Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
When you get older, you have to become a better route runner.
That's right.
Because if you don't have the speed on the outside anymore and you can't make the move like Larry Fitzgerald inside, you're going to be out of the NFL.
At Larry Fitzgerald.
Just look at the route combination. And then all of a sudden, towards the end of his career, after he gets cut by the Cowboys, now I'm going to work with a wide receiver coach to be more proficient with my route running. That's something you should have done every year, and that's one of the reasons why you're not a Dallas Cowboy or in the NFL right now.
You're right. Dez Bryant, who we actually had on the show last week, Ron Berkowitz, his PR agent, had him dial in, and he was interesting. He's taken some time, and I think it's for mental health, to get his body right and get his mind right before he attempts a comeback, because he's not too old. Was he 31, Dez Bryant? So, I mean, he still has some football left in him, but you're right. He had to acknowledge, I'm not a blazer anymore. I'm not an X anymore. I'm not running go routes and beating you 95% of the time like I used to.
It's easy to say you're taking some time off when no contract offers are coming your way. It's very easy to say that. And you look back at that time, boy, does he regret not taking that Baltimore Ravens deal.
No, you're right. I think that would have been the best one. Dave Lapham is getting hung up a little bit. Why do I keep saying his name wrong? Dave Lapham is hung up for right now. We're going to get him in the next hour. But right now, let's do inbounds and out of bounds.
All right.
We have a segment.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, guys. Marshawn Lynch grew up in a rough neighborhood, as we know, in Oakland, and has embraced his past and given back to his community over the years, including running various football camps for youths in the Bay Area. One of those camps is under fire after a video surfaced of Lynch allowing kids as young as 9 years old to do one-on-one tackling drills without any pads or helmets on. Lynch is also heard using foul language, the N-word, and cursing while coaching up the kids and making them run laps if they weren't participating, prompting some parents to pull their kids from the camp and leave. Lynch then got into a heated confrontation with one of the mothers trying to leave the camp.
Is there a man here with you? Is not a man here with you?
What does that matter? I don't care. It's my son.
Look, come over here and record me so they can actually see
No, they can see you fine here.
I know. Come on. So if it takes that amount of time for when I tell a kid to do something and they're not doing what they're supposed to do, then there is consequences, like push-ups, like running laps,
like
sit up,
away from your drill.
Like telling them to get out of my drill if they're not participating.
Get the out of my drill.
Get the out of my drill, or whatever it takes to get my drill. Because there's one kid, but there's also
50 others.
100 more kids out there.
Holding tackling drills for kids without pads is inbounds, out of bounds.
I mean, go ahead, Dave. I'll let
this
you go
is out
first.
Of bounds. I mean, it would have been better if he just would have said, I'm here just so I don't get fined, and would have just stopped there. Because this is a reason why parents and mothers are not letting their kids play football.
That's right.
And for myself, I'm fortunate enough to have a blessed 12-year-old daughter, Addison. But if I had a son, I'd let them play flag football, learn the fundamentals of the game, and wait until high school because of experiences like this that turn parents away from letting their kids play football.
Yeah, this is out of bounds. Look, my kids also played flag football. We lived in the city, so they kind of had to.
Yeah.
On like the roofs of buildings in New York City. Until they moved up to Greenwich, and now they're playing football on a field, and it's football. But I remember when they first started, coaches were yelling at them. I mean, AJ was probably 12, you know, mm-hmm. maybe 13, yelling. And I'm looking at the coach like, you understand that he's not comprehending why you're yelling at him. And whatever message you're trying to send is being lost in the loudness of your voice.
If you want to make a kid play a sport and stick with it, it's got to be fun, especially at this age.
It's exactly right. So I agree with you.
Yep.
Out of bounds.
Out of bounds.
Because if kids get hurt at this age also, they'll never do it again.
Are you in or are you out?
The Baltimore Orioles have the second worst record in baseball, and slugger Chris Davis might be having the worst season of any hitter, hitting just .182 with a paltry .589 OPS for a guy who's making over $20 million a year.
23 to be exact.
Oof. Frustration boiled over in Baltimore last night in a 14-2 loss to the Yankees after skipper Brandon Hyde pulled Davis for a pinch hitter in the fifth. After the two got into a heated exchange in the dugout, Davis lunged at Hyde and had to be held back from physically attacking his manager. After the game, Hyde discussed the incident.
We had words, and I took him out of the game. So, like I said, this is, you know, me and Chris have a good relationship, and these things happen in competitive environments, and that will pass, and we'll get through it. But it was just unfortunate that happened in the dugout. I'm embarrassed that it was caught on camera and people had to see it. But sometimes those things happen.
Now, while verbal arguments between players and coaches are fairly normal in competitive sports, inbounds, out of bounds, it is never acceptable for players and coaches to get physical on the sideline.
I'm going to say that's inbounds. It should never get physical. As long as you've played any sport, you've always heard a coach is yelling at what you did, not as you as a person and as an individual and what you stand for. So those lines have always got to be distinguished. I've gotten yelled at. I've gotten called the most and worst things that you could possibly look up in a dictionary or out of the dictionary. But it never got to this extent because there is always that respect factor of who's the head coach, who's the man in charge, and knowing what your role is.
Well, that's why I say it's out of bounds, because I don't. So player going after coach, I can't condone.
He went spree well.
Coach going the other way, I can't, because you see this happen, especially with younger kids, not kids necessarily, because you're talking about professional levels, but like the younger players in professional sports, they don't quite get it. And sometimes the only way to get their attention, especially if it's a heightened emotional situation, is to get physical with them. You know, I'm not talking about punch them or attack them. I think that's what Sam Thu is intimating here. But sometimes you've got to get physical with them to snap them in. So not player to coach, but coach to player, you know, the respect line. I think I'm okay with that, so I'm going to say out of bounds.
Are you in or are you out?
Now, this one to me is very interesting. I'm sure BT would find it interesting, too. Too bad he's not here. After a federal law passed allowing states to decide if they'll legalize gambling, 18 states have passed bills to allow gambling, while 26 others have introduced bills to permit it. The NFL, NBA, and other professional leagues are embracing the new laws, but the NCAA is in a very tough spot because of the sensitive nature of betting around amateur athletes. Yesterday, the NCAA announced they will not be implementing a weekly injury report for college football, which could help prevent bettors from seeking inside information from players and coaches for wagers surrounding injuries. So, the NCAA's decision not to include a weekly injury report is inbounds or out of bounds.
You know, initially I was going to say inbounds, but I'm going to go out of bounds.
Yeah.
Because you're changing the dynamic of the sport and one of the competitive edges that has always been there. You have a hurt left hand, they're attacking that left hand while you're in a football game.
That's right.
If a running back has a bad left ankle, you know you're trying to run him to the right side of the field because that's a foot that he's truly going to be planning off of. And when you talk about this and we talk about gambling and we talk about the student-athlete aspect of it, when they're making millions of dollars off of these athletes.
I think a billion.
They're going to gamble.
I think a billion last year.
They're going to gamble anyways regardless. So just because you're not putting this out, it's just going to make gamblers go now to the local papers in those towns to look at the student newspapers because they're going to get the injury report anyways.
Or pay the kids on campus to find out. You know what I mean? So I'm going to say out of bounds as well because here's the other thing we're not factoring in. NCAA is likely to benefit financially because of the increase in gambling, just like the NFL is looking to benefit from it, just like the NBA and every other athletic endeavor that has gambling put on it. There's some money that comes the way of the leagues. The NCAA can't be hypocritical about that.
No, they can't.
Right?
They can't.
They got to kind of play the game. So I'm going to say out of bounds. This is not okay.
Are you in or are you out?
Tiger Woods complained of back pain during a pro-am earlier this week before the start of today's FedEx Cup playoff tournament at Liberty National Golf Course in New Jersey. During today's first round, Tiger shot an abysmal 4 over 75, good for 118th in a field of 120.
Oh, he's done.
And 13 shots off the lead.
He gone.
Yep.
Though he didn't blame his poor play on his back. This is the 11th tournament of the year for Tiger, and before the round, he discussed the challenges of playing enough to stay sharp while not overtaxing his back.
I learned a lot last year by playing too much. Coming back from my procedure and not really knowing what to expect, I pushed it pretty hard and vowed I'd never do that again. And so I've cut back the schedule quite a bit, trying to figure out how to stay sharp, practice, and also have my back feeling good all the time is a challenge.
Tiger Woods should play fewer than 10 tournaments a year moving forward.
I'm going to say out of bounds because this is all about his health going into tournaments. Yes, nobody wants to pay that money and those tickets to see a smaller, not even close to version of who Tiger Woods was and who he can be when he is healthy. And he still brings that crowd. He still brings the money to the PGA Tour. And that's why people still throw him into these tournaments to get more people to attend him. But nobody wants to see a glimpse of what somebody used to be based upon injury. So I'm going to say out of bounds. It's all based upon his health.
I agree. But the other thing to this, I'm going to say out of bounds. This is why he shouldn't play fewer than 10. He's rusty.
Yeah.
Right? If he said it. It's just not because of my back. Because he did twinge his back, I think, in the pro-am on Wednesday. Or maybe it was Tuesday, whatever day it was. He twinged his back a little bit, but he didn't blame it on this. Well, if it's not your health, not your back injury, it's got to be because you've played only 10 tournaments this year or 11 tournaments this year, right? This is it's a grind to play in any sport, really, but golf as well, because it's four straight days of walking and, you know, swinging, you know, however many times, 70 to 75 times a round. It takes a toll on you, but in order to do it consistently, you have to do it consistently.
No question. You know what I mean? I always laugh when people are like, oh, yeah, I'm ready to play this year and this summer for golf. I'm like, how many rounds have you played? Well, the driving range. It's easy to hit off a mat when your feet are perfectly still.
Exactly.
It's never like that on the course.
No.
So that's something that you have to get accustomed to, and we always talk about it, especially with golfers, how fast and how efficient they are coming down to the ball. That is all muscle memory that you have to get back.
You're right.
And once again, we talk about that callus. You have to be used to being sore and playing golf.
That's right. It's like, hey, I can go play football right now until I take a hit. And then it's over.
People ask me, well, do you think you can come back? I'm like, maybe for a play, but I'm not holding anybody off at 265.
Exactly.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
The Mets, ridiculously on a roll after a lot of people had counted them out. So who better to have in studio than their number one fan, comedian Jim Brewer. He's getting his makeup on right now. He's going to join us on the other side of this break. Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.